Daniel H. Pink is the author of 5 provocative books about changing the world of work, including the long-running bestsellers A Whole New Mind and Drive. His latest book, and the one we'll discuss today, is To Sell Is Human, The Surprising Truth About Moving Others, which offers a fresh look at the art and science of sales. Dan's last real job was in the White House, where he served from 1995 to 97 as chief speechwriter to Vice President Al Gore. Among other jobs in government, he worked as an aide to U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Daniel went Phi Beta Kappa at Northwestern University, then earned a J.D. at Yale Law School. Daniel's articles on business and technology have appeared in many publications, including The New York Times, Harvard Business Review, Fast Company, and Wired. He's provided analysis of business trends on CNN, CNBC, ABC, and NPR, and he lectures worldwide on economic transformation and the new workplace. In 2011, Thinkers 50 ranked him one of the 50 most influential business thinkers in the world. Welcome, Daniel. Thanks so much for joining us on The Book Report.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, before we get going, I know you worked for Al Gore, so did he really invent the internet?
Not to my knowledge. You know what? I think that's still in dispute.
Okay, down to business. From To Sell Is Human, I've learned that according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Stats, 1 in 9 Americans works in sales. But you believe that it's not only the 1 in 9, it's also the other 8. So we're all in sales now?
Absolutely right. If you look at what those other 8 and 9 are doing on the job, they're spending an enormous portion of their time persuading, influencing, convincing, cajoling people. They are bosses trying to get their employees to do things a different way. They are people trying to get their teammates to come to their project rather than another project. They are trying to get extra resources on the job. They're asking their boss for a raise. They're dealing with suppliers or vendors. And we just, as part of this book, I did a pretty comprehensive survey of about 7,000 adult full-time workers in the U.S., and people report that they're spending about 40% of their time on the job doing this thing that I call non-sales selling, persuading and influencing people to make an exchange, but the cash register's not ringing, no money is changing hands, it's denominated not in dollars, but in time, effort, attention, energy. And so you put it together, 1 in 9 are in sales, 8 and 9 are in non-sales sales, non-sales selling. We're all in sales now, like it or not.
And tell us why we're all in the moving business.
Well, it's the same thing. I mean, basically what we're doing is we're trying to move other people. We're trying to get them to go from point A to point B. So instead of carrying out this project this way, do it in this other way. We are school teachers trying to get kids to pay attention in class and to learn. We are healthcare professionals trying to change people's behavior so that it's more, so that it's healthier. And so at some level, a big portion of our days and lives are about trying to convince, persuade people to move, to change their behavior, to do things differently, to give up something that they have in exchange for what we have.
What is information asymmetry?
It's a huge important point. If you say to people, hey, we're all in sales now, most people kind of recoil at that. They think of sales as sleazy and slimy and dishonest and manipulative. And I think that is a relic. I think that's an old-fashioned view of sales. It's a view that is about, as you say, about information asymmetry. Most of what we know about sales comes from a world where the sellers knew a lot more than the buyers. When the sellers know a lot more than buyers, when they have that advantage of information asymmetry, the seller can rip you off. This is why we have the principle of buyer beware. Buyers had to beware because sellers knew so much more, and buyers had very few choices and no way to talk back. But that information asymmetry has changed. It's now something closer to information parity. Good example are cars. 20 years ago, you go into a Chevy dealer, the Chevy dealer is going to know a lot more about cars, a lot more about Chevys than you ever could. Now you go into a Chevy dealer, it's a different story. You can know as much about cars, as much about Chevys, maybe even more than that car salesperson. You can know what other Chevy dealers in the area, you know, in wherever you are, in whether you're in, you know, Los Angeles or Miami or Washington, D.C., you can know what they're charging, those other dealers are charging for cars. You can go find the factory invoice price of the car. So in a world where sellers have an information advantage, that's a world of buyer beware. In a world where there's equality between buyer and seller, that's a world of seller beware. Sellers are on notice, and as a result, they have to draw on some very different qualities from the old-fashioned, outdated, plaid sport coat, always be closing form of sales.
All right. And talking about always be closing, you say that there are the new ABCs of sales. Tell us about them.
Right. If you go to the social science and say, if we buy this idea that we're all in sales now, but sales isn't what it used to be, how do you get better at this? And so to answer that question, I went to the social science, and what it yields are three particular qualities that are most effective. They are, as you say, the new ABCs: A, attunement; B, buoyancy; C, clarity. A, attunement. Attunement is perspective taking. Can you get out of your own position and understand things from another person's perspective? And there's some really fascinating research on how to do that more effectively by reducing your power, by really understanding people's interests, by being conscious of how they physically behave. B, buoyancy. I had a salesperson say that the hardest part about being in sales is that every day you face, and this is his phrase, an ocean of rejection. So buoyancy is, how do you remain afloat on that ocean of rejection? And again, there are hints about what we can do before an encounter, during an encounter, and after an encounter to remain buoyant. And the final one is C, clarity. You mentioned information asymmetry. We don't have that problem anymore. What we have is information overload. And so being able to access information is less valuable than being able to curate information, distill information, find the patterns in information. There's also a move from away from problem solving as a core skill. Problem solving still matters. But if you have a customer or a prospect who knows precisely what its problem is, they know exactly what their problem is, they can probably find a solution on their own. You're more valuable to them if they don't know what their problem is or they're confused about their problem. And so what matters more today than problem solving is problem finding, identifying problems people don't realize that they have. So these are the new ABCs: A, attunement; B, buoyancy; C, clarity. Those are the qualities that are now most effective in whether you're trying to get your kid to clean their room, whether you're trying to get your boss to give you a raise, whether you're trying to get employees to do their work a little differently.
And you also talk about the three key abilities. Tell us more about that.
Sure. So there are three kind of tactical abilities that are important, which is, first is to pitch. We're pitching all the time. People are distracted. They're not paying full attention. So how do you distill your message so that it engages people and begins a conversation and interaction? That's pitch. Improvise. What do you do when you're perfectly attuned, appropriately buoyant, super clear pitch goes awry, as it will all the time? It turns out that the lessons of improvisational theater give us some clues about how to do that more effectively. And finally, serve. We got to get back to the point. Like, what's the point of the exercise here? And I think we're moving to a world where the best approach, both in terms of best meaning ethical, but best in terms of being effective, is to serve first and sell later, to put an ethic of service and purpose at the front of what you do.
You wrote that sometimes extroverts don't make the best salespeople. That really surprised me.
Yeah, it surprised me too. This is some really fascinating research out of the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. And what it showed, there's a fellow named Adam Grant, a great young scholar. And here's what he did. He went to a software company, and he gave the software salespeople assessments. And those assessments located them on a introversion-extroversion scale, beginning at 1 and ending at 7. So 1 being extremely introverted, 7 being extremely extroverted. And then he charted their sales performance over the next 3 months. So what we expect is that the people who are going to be really good at sales are going to be the people very high in extroversion, the 6s and the 7s, the gregarious, glad-handing, back-slapping, hey, buddy, what can I do to put you in a Buick this afternoon kind of guys. And it turned out they were not very good, those very strong extroverts. In fact, they were barely better than the very strong introverts who, are cowering in a corner and don't even want to pick up the phone. The people who did really well, though, were the people in the middle, what social psychologists call ambiverts, the people who weren't strong introverts, ones and twos, weren't strong extroverts, sixes and sevens. They were the threes, the fours, and the fives. They were a little bit introverted, a little bit extroverted. They knew when to push, they knew when to hold back. They knew when to speak up, they knew when to shut up. That they're much more attuned, much more calibrated. And so this idea that extroverts make the best salespeople is absolutely not true. There's literally no evidence of it in the literature that it's that is true. The people who do the best are really the ambiverts, the people in the middle. And the good news is that most of us are ambiverts.
Tell our listeners about the empty chair and Amazon's Jeff Bezos.
Oh, yeah, it's a cool exercise, what he does. This is a great exercise, and it's a great exercise in attunement and something that is, I think, really useful to people. So what Bezos does, and other companies do it too, is that when he has a meeting, he'll have his marketing people, his software people, his strategy people. But when he has a meeting, he'll include at the meeting, around the table, a chair that remains empty. Interesting. An empty chair at the meeting. Why? Because that chair is there to represent the customer. And this is a really simple technique to start seeing things from your customer's point of view. So the most important person in the room is actually not in the room, the customer. And by putting that empty chair, it forces people to say, what would the customer think of what we're talking about? Would we say the sort of thing that we're about to say in front of customers? And this ends up being a really, really actionable, effective tool for all kinds of organizations, whether you're a for-profit or not-for-profit. Put an extra chair around the meeting table and have that represent the customer, and it will force you to start seeing things from the customer's point of view.
You know, what I loved about your book is that it really isn't only for salespeople and business people. I think kids, you know, entering college or going out into the workforce for the first time should read it, no matter what their profession choice would be.
Well, thanks. I'm glad to hear that. I agree with you. But yeah, I think that our kids going out into the workforce, I mean, they're selling themselves. They're selling themselves in a very tough job market. And the truth is that they're going to be selling themselves for their careers. Once they get into jobs, they're going to be selling their ideas. And what we can't do is say it'd be so precious and say, oh, I don't do that. That's beneath me. My view is that if you really believe in yourself, if you really believe in what you've created, you actually have an obligation to sell it. You can't be so precious and say, oh, I've created this thing, and it's so awesome, people are just going to find it on their own. I think if you create something fantastic, you have something to give to the world, you have an obligation to speak up and tell people about it. You can get better at selling without being a sellout. You can get better at selling by being more human.
All right, Dan, I love this book. And as I said, I'd recommend it to anybody. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me. I really appreciate it.
All righty, bye.